One of the real joys of the Premiership is that it's a place where fairy tales can come true, where dreams can be realised. For proof of that, look no further than the Exeter Chiefs. For much of over a century and a half of existence, they played in the local Devon League. But through the 90s and 2000s, Exeter rose through the ranks to finally reach the Premiership. And that's where they really kicked on. That's where the story became incredible. In the latest episode of our Rugby Stories podcast series, we head back to the 2019-2020 season and the famous Devon Double.
It was about going 100%, working as hard as I can.
Here goes goal!
I'm just a guy from Tidmouth.
How's your heart rate?
Yeah, not great.
Pandemonium at Stanley Park!
There's boys crying after that.
Our biggest strength was that we didn't go away.
And welcome again to rugby's new normal.
They never train, they just play games of rugby. So they thought they were in heaven.
And that was probably the moment where I was like, I can tell the boys are up for this.
And here's Slate! A lightning strike from the Chiefs!
We definitely set out at the start that we wanted to be double champions.
From little Chiefs to big Chiefs to champions!
In Rugby Stories, you'll get the full, extended, uncut anecdotes from the players, coaches and key figures, some never told before. The foundation of Exeter's remarkable success was built by the Baxter family. Between current director of rugby, Rob Baxter, brother Richie and father John, the family have played over 1,000 games for the club. While John spent 47 years as a player, chairman and director, Rob lives next door at their family farm. His 13 years as leader in chief haven't come out of sentiment or nepotism for that matter. In fact, his trophy collection includes two Premiership titles, a European Champions Cup, as well as having taken Exeter into the top flight of English rugby in the first place. He really is at the very, very heart of the incredible Exeter story.
I remember him a bit before the late 80s, so obviously my dad was involved. I don't remember dad playing, although I did go and watch him, apparently as a kind of babe in arms. I do remember watching my uncle play a couple of times towards the end of his career. Very much my memories are down at the County Ground, initially as a ball boy. My dad was involved on the committee there and sometimes ran the line and then eventually became chairman. My uncle played there as well and then was coaching. I would go down with my family on Saturday, like I say, be ball boy then. I worked my way up to being on the scoreboard as I grew my seniority, so to speak, and that was it really. It was part of kind of family life at weekends, and obviously then at school level I started playing not at Exeter. Exeter didn't have a youth setup at the time, so I actually didn't start playing at Exeter till kind of Colts level. Obviously through Colts and into the senior sides, and while I was at home working on the farm and going through Exeter College, and kind of went from there really. But my earliest memories are very much on the old County Ground and running around after the game, as you used to see kids doing and probably still do at local clubs, you know, knocking the ball over the posts while the players are in the clubhouse and doing the post-match. And I say, we kind of went from there, went to me playing and my wife doing teas and my mum doing teas and all the things you'd imagine that happen at, well, what in essence we still are, which is a members club that's there really for guys to go and play a game of rugby. You know, I remember talking to my father, well, you know, when I was still playing well before I started coaching, and saying to him, you know, where do you think Exeter could come from? This is while we were at the old County Ground, before we had any developments. And he said, I think with the structure we could potentially put in place, with the population we've got around us, the players we've got around us in local teams, you know, we could be a good second division team. You know, that's now the Championship. We did. We worked our way there over a period and we got promoted after a very good season in a very competitive league. We probably should have had a blip in our first year. We probably should have got relegated, but they restructured the league and that gave us a breath. And I think that almost forced us into professionalising a little bit. Brought in a full-time coach, Ian Bremner, who put in a layer of organisation and detail. But of course, like a lot of clubs, we could never turn over that relegated Premiership side. They kind of kept coming and going and coming and going. And actually, I became a coach when Ian left, but I came in as forwards coach, not the head guy. And it was 2 or 3 years before I had that opportunity. And then all I can really say is that at that stage, I was probably getting very immersed in coaching as a whole and the detail and the analysis, but also how we trained in most aspects. And it just moved us on that next level, because I think that's what people probably, when they look at the Exeter stories, the bit they don't quite understand. It's not been giant steps. It's been lots of small incremental steps. And some of them, that's not just over 10 years. That's been easily a 30-year process.
It took until 2010 to win the championship title. Now, lots of clubs come into the Premiership and fade after a year or two. So the focus for Exeter was to keep their place as a Premiership regular. Fair play to Rob Baxter, he managed to do this. And over the decade, he was able to bring through a crop of talented young players. One of these was fly half and future Exeter captain, Joe Simmons. He made his debut in the 2016-2017 season, following in older brother Sam's footsteps in becoming a Chiefs regular and an Exeter superstar.
My journey is a bit different, to be honest with you. Obviously, I have an older brother who's at the club as well, so I kind of saw what his journey was like. He was similar, to be fair. I obviously always played rugby at a young age. Went through football and rugby. Never really knew exactly what I wanted to do, but yeah, in the end, I chose the right decision to go with rugby. But I went to Ivybridge College, which was a link with Exeter Chiefs, and then spent 2 years there and was lucky enough then to get a call up to the academy up here at Exeter to train every day, really. And the good thing about the academy here, you train with the first team as well. We're all together. So, had the opportunity to train up here, played a couple of pre-season games, and then worked my way to sign a senior academy contract. I remember sitting in the stand here, I was actually in the North Terrace, and watching the final between Exeter and Bristol to get Exeter into the Premiership. When I saw that, I was obviously a keen rugby player, and I saw the way they celebrated and the feeling of it. Actually, at that time, it was like, oh, I really want to do this. I want to be in this opportunity to play at such a high level and play at a club like this. So yeah, although it was, God, 11 years ago or whatever now, that was probably a moment for me that I just wanted to achieve something at. But the club has just moved on. And I can tell by the players that want to come here and play for this club are huge players like Stuart Hogg, who's obviously a British and Irish Lion. Never in a million years did I think players like that would want to come down here to Devon to play rugby.
England international Jack Noel grew up in a family of fishermen from Cornwall. The winger would become the first Exeter player to be called up to the British and Irish Lions. Both he and Simmons felt Exeter was the place to be as a young, talented player with ambition. Noel was given his chance as a teenager in 2012, and fair play to him, he never looked back.
I do take a bit of stick from the boys now. Obviously, I'm a proud Cornishman. But I think there's a rule now, once you spend, you know, 10 years living in Devon, they try classing you as being from here. But it is, even as a kid growing up, they know who you are, they know who we're signing, they know everything about you. So it's good to be part of that and be part of the family down here. There wasn't a lot of teams playing young players in the Premiership at the time. And, you know, Rob and Ali, their thoughts on it were, if you're, you know, good enough, you're playing well enough and you're informed, then we're going to pick you, which was, you know, awesome for us young boys to know that was a chance. All of us would admit, signing for the club, we would never expect to have played first team games. And then, yeah, for that to happen to me, I think I was 19, and it was mental. You know, the boys that were above me at the time as well, they certainly helped me out.
It starts from the top. Our performance are because of the coaches that are coaching us, and it definitely starts with Rob as director of rugby, the way his culture is around the club, and just the way he comes across for the players is brilliant. So he's been great for not just my development, but for everyone here.
Rob, you know, he's obviously a pretty special bloke. I think, you know, the main thing is that you can tell how much this club means to him. Not just him, but his family as well. He's been here for hundreds of years. And I think his commitment to it, I think this is buy-in. He's very good with the players, very good on, you know, finding how individually something makes you tick.
It's more of like an old school vibe here, where we like to have a hard game of rugby, but always celebrate with a few beers. It's kind of what Rob used to do, so he's ingrained it in us, definitely.
Exeter's progression after promotion was slow, but steady, and very self-assured. They came close to winning their first title in 2016, finishing as runners-up to Saracens. They went one better 12 months later against Wasps in the final, and what a final it was.
Could this be the fairy tale? The line-out ball is won from Dennis. This is their strength, one of their many strengths. Simmons eyeing up the try line. Simmons! It's there!
Doesn't matter who you are, where you're currently playing, maybe one day it could be you.
From little Chiefs to big Chiefs to champions.
In the next 2 years after their first title success, Exeter finished the regular Premiership season at the top of the table, but on both occasions they were beaten in the playoff final by Saracens, and a brand new Premiership rivalry was born.
I can talk a lot about the disappointments or the things I went through, either a player or a coach, that kind of got us in the Premiership. But I think every kind of winning story, it does start with losses, doesn't it? And it does, because otherwise you'd just be serial winners, wouldn't you?
You've got a feel for them. They win the regular season, they finish top, and they come to the final, and then they just lost that battle of the skies, which gave Saracens the foothold back in the game.
We almost were really, really happy just to be there, and the fact that we finished second that year, I think, or first, and we were going to Twickenham, we won a home semi-final, and we were going to Twickenham. It was awesome. We're a team that had recently been in the Championship, and now we're going to Twickenham to play in the Prem Final. And, you know, we never really turned up that game. We lost the Saris, and then after, boys weren't too disappointed, which is weird to think, but we were almost just happy just being in that final. And then it wasn't until the year after where we were like, I think it was Jeff Parlin, halfway through the season, we weren't doing very well. We were getting beaten in our first few games, we got beaten quite badly. And Jeff was like, look, we were at a final last year, we were happy to be there, it was good, but we want to go winning stuff now.
The Premiership final we lost the year before to Saracens was a semi-defining moment for us. And I think a few things happened that season, because we lost a close final, we'd got ourselves in a winning position in the game, and we came a bit short. But we also knew that there was a game there for the winning against what was quite clearly the strongest team in Europe. And the story of how that was, or whatever, is a different story. If you can get close to beating them, or you feel you could beat them on the day, you're a pretty good side. So I think it gave us a belief, and it also gave us obviously a bit of anger and a bit of fight. And then obviously the story of things that unfolded at Saracens probably gave us that level of anger and irritation that you probably need a little bit as well to really bring the best out of yourselves.
We went on to lose against Saris in that final, which was a tough one to take, and I think that one really hit home with the boys, because the season is extremely long, and to finish it with absolutely nothing, it's pretty gutting.
The revelations that Saracens had broken the Premiership salary cap rules over three consecutive seasons from 2016 to 2019 caused real bitterness in the Exeter ranks. It left Rob Baxter seething at what might have been, with his side runners up to Saracens in 2018 and 2019. And Rob is not a fella to hold back his words.
What is the reason of having a salary cap if the whole point of it is not that everyone should be working within it and trying to work within it and expecting everybody else to work within it? If all 12 clubs, whenever they look at a salary cap, all they're trying to do is hire lawyers to read every minutiae of it, to try and find ways of making payments outside it, why would we even have one?
The Premiership is a league absolutely riddled with rivalries and backstories, and this was a brand new one. So no surprise when emotions boiled over when the sides met in the 2019-2020 season.
That anger that we hadn't done better, probably, I don't mind saying, probably feeling a little bit hard done by as the story unfolded from the Saracen salary cap stuff. And all of those things there, if you can angle them the right way and use them the right way, they're all very powerful emotions. And I think the lads harnessed those really, really well. And we did have a group of players who'd been to finals and had some success and had some pain and had some international experience.
And maybe now it's all coming out, all of that frustration that the Chiefs have talked about.
Our goals for that season were to win everything we could win again. We felt like the year before we lost the Saris again, and it was tough to take. But again, where we were as a team is we felt like we should be winning these games, and that was our sole, our sole focus was to win these games, and like I said, was to get out of Europe and, kind of get that monkey off our back of just being a group stage team, wanted to be in these finals. And our ambition was there, and we were there as a team, and we felt like we could really do it.
Exeter went into the 2019-2020 European Champions Cup looking to improve upon their two previous quarterfinals in the competition. They had never won European silverware. The pool stage campaign began in the south of France against La Rochelle.
There goes White, missing out Witten. The long pass out wide to O'Flaherty. O'Flaherty steps inside West. That is an outstanding finish.
La Rochelle away, first game. You know, if we're honest, we did struggle in, you know, French teams away. They're extremely good at home. And that was our first game. It was one we targeted. We went there, we won. Once you then start winning and you're rolling on to games, you're feeling like that we're in a good place here. Let's keep pushing it. It's in our hands. We don't have to chase anything. We're at the top of the league. The only people that can lose it at the moment is us. You know, finishing all those group games where we were was an awesome place to be.
A win in France was followed by victory against Glasgow Warriors. Exeter would go on to claim back-to-back wins against fellow Premiership side Sale, draw in Glasgow, and finish with a 33-14 win over La Rochelle. They finished Pool 2 10 points clear of second place Glasgow to secure a home quarterfinal crucial in this competition. Things have been going well back in the Premiership too, and in 23-year-old Joe Simmons, a new leader was emerging for Rob Baxter.
There's always a bigger scenario going on around your captains and your leadership. Our starting fly half, and so was calling a lot of shots on the field anyway. We decided it was the right time a little earlier than as we got towards the end of that season for him to start skippering the side. Just to help developing him as a leader as well.
Hugely proud, and especially to have my older brother here with me playing beside me. It's probably a bit weird for him, his younger brother captaining him, but something that I'll definitely look back on for the rest of my life, really. Again, I probably take it a little bit for granted, but when I hear my family talk about it, it's not just a proud moment for me, it's a proud moment for them as well.
He is very emotive about the club, and it means an awful lot to him, which I think when you talk to players, and that's obvious, I think that makes a big difference. And that's obviously one of his key strengths. But we also had a leadership group around him that we could really align with him, and he could really bounce off, and they were all on the same wavelength. And of course, what he also did, and I think this is really important, is he kind of led the team nervously, really, because, you know, he couldn't miss a kick at goal hardly. You know, it was one of those seasons where he could walk up and he could knock it over, and things were happening for him. Sometimes when you can see that it's happening for a player, you can let them be the leader, you can let them be the figurehead, and let them get on with it. And I think that very much kind of all happened in that season, all encapsulated itself really well for Joe.
I'm a quite emotional guy anyway, and I think that's probably potentially the key thing that he saw in me. When I am emotional and when I talk to players, that the players around me do follow me and they like to play for me. So that's kind of what I felt from outside the individual players, because it is weird. I was 23 at the time, one of the younger players in the team, and I'm captaining Scotland internationals, England international, British and Irish Lions, and that's probably why I doubted myself a little bit, because I just thought, I'm just a guy from Tidmouth that's a local lad here at Exeter, and I've had the opportunity to captain this side. But as soon as I kind of put that aside and enjoyed captaining, I think that's when my best performances came through.
And over the line, and
tackle!
Can't get it down. Tremendous defence.
In the early part of that season, before COVID hit, we had got ourselves in a very strong position in the Premiership. We got ourselves in a very strong position in our European pool. We were top of our pool. You know, the game gets shut down.
Exeter were in a great position to win a domestic and European double. But in March 2020, the whole world ground to a halt. The coronavirus pandemic shut down the nation, and with it, all professional sport.
There was rumours going around the season's going to be cancelled. Other countries were cancelling their league seasons, weren't they? We can't tell the players when they'll be back, because we don't know. No one was actually telling us anything about when we'd be back. We are probably the team in pole position in both competitions within England to get something out of both competitions. It's going to be worth working hard now while you're away from the club. And obviously in that first day that everything was going to be shut down, our conditioning staff and everybody worked extremely hard to get the gym down there, stripped down. All the equipment was gone in players' garages or wherever we could get it for them to be able to use their training time and just be able to send them programmes and all the stuff that I suppose nearly every sporting body had to do. Just got everything out there to them. And then obviously our conditioning staff set up WhatsApp groups and little challenges and little tests. The players started posting it themselves, training and sending it to each other. And they actually got their own culture going of working hard through that lockdown period. But I think it was because they knew there was something genuinely worth fighting for.
When we were eventually allowed to be back in the club, you could tell how hard the boys had worked in their isolation time at home, whether it was for their run or their home gyms or stuff. I think we were halfway through the season and we were top of both leagues. It's something we've never done before. Why would we let it slip? Rob kept saying and sending emails out and phone calls saying that these games will be played. I don't know whether it'll be 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, but they will be played eventually. So let's not let ourselves down. Let's come in, continue where we left off.
I think that's probably where we had the edge on other teams. We worked that hard, that much harder to come in good shape and in good fitness.
The Premiership season did finally resume in August, although no fans were allowed in the stadiums. The atmospheres were very, very new and strange. Exeter picked up where they left off 5 months earlier, with four straight wins that month, seeing off Leicester, Sale, Bristol and Worcester.
It was get back in for 8 or 9 Premiership games, squeezed into just a few weeks, plus quarterfinal, I think, because we qualified, quarterfinal, semi-final. And so everything was there for a group who wanted to just put their foot down and enjoy just almost like being on tour. You know, that's very much how we talk to the players about it. This will almost be like going on a Lions tour, an old school Lions tour, where you've got 15, 16 games and you're just going to be going for it and that's your season done. You know, for some of our players, they thought they're in heaven. You know, they never really had to train. They just play games of rugby. We had a strong rotation. We had a couple of fantastic midweek results that I think buoyed us as much as they dented a few other teams. And then we found ourselves in really good shape, physically and mentally.
It was empty stadiums. You could hear a pin drop at some times. You could literally hear the other team shouting their moves and things. So the fact that we were back playing and on a match day, you know, experience with just the lads. I think further on down the line, you would speak to most of the boys and, you know, it did come a bit strange and maybe the motivation wasn't always there with empty stadiums because it is tough. You know, for us, it was easy because we had those top spaces and we had the dream of being, you know, Prem champs and Heineken champs. For us as a team, that's what we kept saying that season was, we're going to do this.
We wrote the story, you know, we made it about us. There was never felt the time when we didn't have 15 guys on the pitch heading in the same direction. And any coach will tell you that is the golden thing. That's the golden ticket. You know, if you can put that in a bottle and take it anywhere you want, you know, you'll be a successful coach all over the world.
September the 20th, and Exeter returned to the Heineken Champions Cup, albeit with familiar opponents. It was Northampton Saints in the quarterfinal at Sandy Park.
Well, how good has it been to have Europe back? There was a while when we all wondered if we'd ever get to play these games, whether we'd have a weekend like this when you just can't take your eyes off anything.
Again, there was no fans, but we had a home quarterfinal against another English team that we had played so many times. So, again, kind of it felt like all of our stars were aligning for these big games, and we knew exactly what we wanted. We knew that we were, you know, 3 games away from winning a final, and this was our first step at the moment. Premiership was kind of looking after itself.
For us, getting up for a game like that, it was pretty easy, and a lot of the boys that were in the team had never played a European quarterfinal, so the motivation was definitely there. It was just about going out there and performing.
And what can Chiefs do with this? They put down a marker at the scrum, and now Slade gliding through midfield, and he finds Maunder, and Maunder, does he turn? Scores. Oh, my goodness. Noel.
I think I snuck in just behind a couple of forwards and, you know, managed to break through the middle. It's one of those things where you're not thinking about whether I'm going to score, whether how good it would be if I scored it. It was all about winning.
The slippery little eel on his way, and he's slipped his way all the way to the try line. A fisherman stop, and there were big holes in Northampton's net.
Exeter were resounding 38 points to 15 winners, and Jack Noel would get his dad's grudging blessing that maybe turning his back on the family business wasn't a bad idea in the end. Fair to say, his dad was hooked on rugby.
I'm the first person not to have continued the family business. I think it goes back for as long as any of my family can remember that it's always been fishing. So I'm the first Noel and the first son not to have taken over the business and carried on. You know, I always joked with my mum when I was younger saying I'd probably go into fishing, but obviously I do have a little bit of a joke with my dad, and there's probably a little side to him that is a little bit gutted that I've got two other brothers that none of us are going to, you know, continue. But yeah, that speaking to him after the game, I think I kind of, you know, made up for a little bit. He always says that, you know, to have a son that plays for, you know, Exeter, to win these games, to play for England as well, is probably just as good as having a son that goes fishing and carries on the business. So, yeah, I think he's forgiven me a little bit now. I have this joke with my dad all the time. He still says to this day, I think I'm 9 operations deep right now and get battered every single Saturday. He still says fishing's harder.
So, 6 days later, and European royalty, Toulouse, came over to Devon. Nothing else but reaching the final was enough for Joe Simmons.
The key thing for us was winning it. Like, you can get to the semi-final and people won't remember that. You win it, everyone remembers it in such a tough year. So we knew that it was going to be a challenging game. And I actually would say the there wasn't as much pressure. Although friends and family will remember it for the rest of their life, you actually are the one that's playing in it, and ultimately you'll remember it. So it was all about that. We obviously knew the threats that they had with the likes of Finn, Russell, Vakatawa, and the list goes on.
We were lucky to have a home semi-final. We had Toulouse coming over to play at Sandy Park. And although we didn't have the fans, we still had that feeling that it was our place, it was our stadium, we had our change rooms. So we felt that we were the team on form. But it was, again, it was in everyone's minds that what's the point of finishing here? It's good that we got a semi-final, but no one's going to remember this in 5 years' time.
To play against such a great team in Toulouse, who've won loads of competition, whether it's Europe, the French leagues and stuff like that, was again, really good. But and I think that was a good thing about the team. You could come up against a team like Toulouse and already lose the game because you're worried about playing such a well-known team, such a good French team, that you could lose the battle before you even started.
What of Exeter? Already a step further in this competition than they've ever been. So far in Europe, they've offered promise over substance, but there is a real sense that they're ready now to deliver.
I think the great thing with us, it was all about what we had to do.
Over the try line, and there's the score. Close range combat. There are few teams better.
Some people might not see it, but it was more just the emotion of players. Like, you could feel it in every action they did, whether it was a tackle or carry, they wanted to get that extra 1%.
Joe and brother Sam both scored tries as Exeter's forwards were the stars in a 28 points to 18 win.
Simmons darting, dummying and scoring! Chiefs surely now headed for the final. They're going to the final. Exeter, 80 minutes from the promised land now.
As soon as the final whistle went, like, there's boys crying after that because the emotion that we put into game was outstanding, and yeah, it was just a brilliant game to be involved in. I can't explain it too much because it's hard to put into words.
Amongst all the joy, there were huge concerns for Jack Knoll.
Pretty much snapped the bottom of my foot, which wasn't ideal. It's towards the end of the game, I think it was probably the last 10 minutes or so. I went to push off and I kind of thought I snapped the bottom of my boot. That's kind of what it felt like. It didn't hurt too much. And I looked at my boot and realised it wasn't my boot. It was something in my foot. So, you know, lucky enough, I continued the game. Proud and happy to be part of that. But I remember straight after the game, it was all about worrying about my foot. And the first thing I thought was, I'm absolutely gutted if this is bad and I'm going to miss a final. I ruptured the ligament from your toe to your foot, which was a full rupture. So one that I needed to have an operation on. But yeah, sitting down with the surgeon, he said, look, the damage is done. There's nothing really much more you can do to it. So it's up to you. If you can grit your teeth and get through the pain of it, we can strap up. I can get physios work extremely hard for me to, you know, get everything strong around it. It was me in the gym every single day trying to get as strong as I could to strap up to play in this final, which, you know, I'm so glad that I did. I did literally everything I could to try and get myself in a good place to play in these games, because, you know, I'd never forgive myself if I didn't try to play in this game.
Remarkably, Knoll found a way. He was named in the starting 15 for the final at Ashton Gate, a relatively short hop up the M5 to Bristol. The opponents would be Racing 92, six-time French champions and twice Heineken Cup runners-up. They were packed full of stars. Rob Baxter knew how dangerous they would be.
The problem with Racing is you can watch them play in one game and you just can't see a way to beat them. You just look and there's tries going in from everywhere. They look powerful, and you've got Finn Russell pull something out of absolutely nowhere. You know, and you look at the size of their pack of forwards and all of a sudden they're 5 metres out and they just get a rumble over, and you're looking around. But you also know that, especially when you're playing well yourself, and say you've played Toulouse, so you know we're a good French side, and you know that we were capable of creating those kind of windows of opportunity that happen in a game. That gave us a real confidence. You know, beating Toulouse, I think, probably was also the beating of Racing in a lot of ways, because it created a bit of a blueprint for us. And the blueprint was really that, you know, you stick in there, and if in doubt, you know, you just get a French player on the floor, or opposition player, not all French, either. You get an opposition player on the floor and you make him get up and you make sure you get up quicker than he does. And all the little things that can happen in a game of rugby can happen if you kind of stand your ground for as long as possible.
I think it was good that we played a French team in that semi-final, because we kind of knew what we were going to expect. Racing Toulouse are a very, very good side. A lot of what we said the week actually is we pride ourselves on being a fit side. We wanted to keep the ball in, we wanted to keep the tempo high and just and run their big forwards around. And I think that's what kind of, to be fair, we didn't really talk too much about the occasion because it's just another game of rugby. We've been playing it for years.
You know, I'd hate to finish a game, be sat in the change room after and know I've let the team down and I've not done 100% in that match to have won it for the boys. So there isn't one player that I think has come through this group that has been like that.
We get there a little bit earlier. You always have half an hour to yourself just to get ready, listen to music or whatever. And then you have your own time to go out and train. Obviously, me being a kicker, go out half an hour before, get my kicks done. And then usually about 20 to the 20-minute mark, we all come together, and that's when we all come out together and kind of get each other ready. We have 20 minutes just to make sure the intensity and emotional levels are up there before kickoff.
And you don't want to walk off and go, oh, maybe I had another 5 minutes in me. You know, it all has to get laid out there across the 80 minutes, and that's what made us a powerful team that day. You know, we were like a 15 engines, 23 engines or whatever, but we were all pulling in the same direction with the foot on the throttle, so to speak, and that's what makes any team in a that kind of scenario very powerful.
Exeter, we're ready.
He's assisting, they're over the line. First strike, Exeter.
There's one moment that we had like a set play and I kicked down the wing. It was Luke Candicky, Jack Noel and Slade. And like Luke Candicky's a hooker and he was flying down the wing there. And like you can tell how much it means to people. Like a hooker should never ever sprint down the wing and make a tackle in the corner against a French winger or whatever. And that was probably the moment where I was like, I can tell that boys are up for this. And it was a huge moment. We got a turnover, kicked to the corner, and we actually scored from it. So that was probably the main moment that I remember in the game where I knew that every boy is up for it.
They got their second score. They are dominating Racing 92.
Inside 60 minutes, Rob Baxter's men had opened up a 14-0 lead thanks to tries from Luke Cowan-Dickey and Sam Simmons.
We did fly out the blocks against Racing. We fly out the blocks and we kind of took control of the tempo of the game. And it was probably us then who actually drew breath a little bit. I mean, it did look like we had a bit of an adrenaline dump after 10 minutes. I kind of was looking on and thinking, oh, we've got some scores on the board here. I looked at a couple of extra players looking a bit leggy and a bit. And I think we'd really fired ourselves into the game very emotionally. And we did have a 10 minutes where we got our second win and we had to have a breathe and run and blow, and Racing came back into it and it seesawed a little bit, didn't it?
LaRue, Russell, oh, Flatty went looking for the intercept, it's Zeebo!
You know, when you've got boys like Zeebo in the back line, Kirtley Beale, things like that, I think, you know, they're just some of the stars that they've got, but they've obviously got some pretty talented French players in there as well.
Imhoff, searching for holes, and there it is! Imhoff, stealing in out of nowhere!
Let's bring in Rob Baxter, the Chiefs Director of Rugby. Rob, how's your heart rate?
Yeah, not great. There's a lot going on, isn't there?
And out of nowhere, the French side had clawed it back to 14-12. Momentum was on their side heading into the final minutes of the first half.
When Williams drives over.
The game swung again when Harry Williams crossed for Exeter to make it 21-12 at halftime. Then, in a frantic opening 10 minutes of the second half, there were three tries.
Plenty of numbers out to the left. That's loose from Russell. Noel seizes upon it. And here's Slade. A lightning strike from the Chiefs. Shah raging forwards to the line. He's got there too.
Either side of Henry Slade going over for the Chiefs, Simon Zeebo and Camille Chat reduced the score with tries of their own. Then the boot of Maxime Machineau reduced the final to a nerve-wracking one-point contest with 15 minutes to play. Exeter led 28 points to 27. Then, with 10 minutes left, a huge moment in the game as Exeter's Thomas Francis was sent to the sin bin and Exeter would need to hold out with 14 men and the European Champions Cup at stake.
But it is a yellow card offence because you didn't get the ball.
Exeter were defending for their lives. Rob Baxter watched as Racing decided not to go for a drop goal when they were under the posts.
The fact that we survived the scramble on our goal line when we had 14 men on the field, and you know, obviously Racing took the decision to go for the try, we were down to 14 men, they didn't take the shot at goal. I suppose that gave us an opportunity to hold them out, but it also gave them the opportunity to finish the game off, really. And obviously we hold them out and Sam Ideal climbs that penalty right on the goal line.
It's Chiefs ball! And Sam
Will they go Klein over the ball? Makes the tackle on Beale to begin with. Bounces back to his feet. That is a massive turnover.
And suddenly, after a turnover, with seconds on the clock, Exeter got the chance that their defending deserved.
There's a penalty. They've waited long enough. Nigel Owens has waited long enough. And with less than a minute to play.
You know, we were around the halfway line in those last few moments. Seeing Nigel Owens' arm come up, seeing it was our penalty. Looking at the clock, there's like a minute left or 50 seconds left, whatever. And there was a bit of confusion around whether we should go for the goal, what we should do. But, you know, with Simo stepping up, taking the kick, obviously getting it, that's when it got a bit weird.
Just say, come on, we'll take the shot at goal. Make sure to Joe that he gives it a good leather to make sure whatever happens, it's going to go through somewhere. And we'll do a flat out chase and hopefully the game will be gone.
Well, at the time, quite nerve-wracking because I obviously took the kick and I panicked because I should have took the whole time. Well, I did take the whole time, but the clock didn't move. And I didn't want to change any setup to my kick because I could have missed it. And I wanted to make sure that I did everything that I would usually do on a normal kick. And I did that. And I kept in the corner of my eye looking at the timer because it wasn't moving. And I kicked it.
Simmons made the kick. Then more stress, more nerves, and a crucial question for Exeter and referee Nigel Owens. Was there time for Racine to kick off and seek a game-winning try?
OK, so you're telling me then, all I want to know is when the ball went over the post, was the time up, yes or no?
Technically, the time was up, yes
I don't
it was.
To technically, I need to know, is the time up, yes or no, please, when the ball went over the post?
Nigel Owens was a bit unsure of the time, and it was a weird one, because I actually heard, there was people in the bar watching it at Ashton Gate, and I actually heard Chiefs supporters screaming, like cheering that the game was over, so at that time, I realised it was over, but they obviously knew on telly before Nigel Owens actually made the call, so luckily I heard the cheer. The nerves went a little bit and yeah, the excitement kicked in.
When you asked for the clock to be put on, we were unable to do so on the TV.
Right, so the time is over, you're telling me?
The time is over,
okay.
Yes.
Mayhem. The confirmation, the time is over before the ball was over.
Total mayhem for the Chiefs, the champions! And the fairy tale is complete. An extraordinary finish to an epic contest.
Exeter had held on and won their first European silverware.
Everyone runs back to halfway and everyone starts questioning each other. And I remember being stood in the middle of the grandstand going, what's going on here? Why? Obviously then there's the debate on whether the clock should have gone dead and that gets decided and the whistle goes. So it was kind of a, we've done it, we haven't done it. Have we done it? Yes, we've done it. It was a funny end. And for me personally, I was delighted for myself, obviously, but delighted for the club, delighted for the players. I mean, more than anything, delighted for the players. My overriding memory of the day is just watching the players almost break down. And whether that would have happened if crowds had been in and they'd known their supporters were there and families were there, whether it would have just been all about joy then and them getting to their families and, you know, all the stuff you would imagine it would be with your families and your loved ones there. I don't know. But it was just a very inward, emotional day. Like I say, the bubble we had all been in for such a long time just encapsulated everybody. And that's what I remember feeling. And then I remember being interviewed afterwards and just watching the lads starting to celebrate and just feeling a lot of pride, a lot of satisfaction in what they'd have achieved.
FaceTiming mum, dad, my partner and my kids obviously after the game was a weird one. Obviously gutting not to have them there because all I wanted to do was have them on the field with me. But it was the next best thing. But then, yeah, being in that change room after, quite often it's in, out, shower, get back on the road and come home. Up there with one of the most special moments of being in that change room because everyone in there had so much to contribute to winning that game. So to be able to actually sit down, have a beer with them, have a sing-song, have the trophy in the middle of all of us, memories that I won't forget.
It's probably a moment that I really can't describe because this club has broke records that year. It's the first time we made a Heineken Cup semi-final, first time we made a final, and then to win it is, yeah, unbelievable. And for me, growing up, I always watched rugby, always watched the likes of Johnny Wilkerson and stuff like that lift Heineken Cup trophies, and then to have the opportunity to do it myself is just unbelievable.
25 years ago when this tournament launched, Exeter scrabbling around in the fourth tier of English rugby. The Exeter Chiefs, the cream of Devon, now the champions of Europe.
few beers on the bus on the way back with the boys, and obviously having a lockdown baby. Zimmy was probably a month old or so, so I was changing nappies at 4 o'clock in the morning with a sore head, and then singing Frozen with my oldest daughter, Nori, Let It Go at about 7 o'clock in the morning. So it was literally 12 hours before we had just won a Heineken, and now we've brought that back down to earth.
A week later, at Twickenham, Exeter would get their shot at the double, and Wasps would be the opponents in the Premiership final.
We set out at the start that we wanted to be double champions, but it was probably something we didn't talk about enough until it was getting close to having the opportunity to do that, because we were in semi-finals, quarter-finals. The pleasing thing is that we spoke about it at the start, and it was something that we did achieve.
And the end of an extraordinary season, an extraordinary club, Exeter Chiefs, double winners. It's one of the most inspiring, astonishing stories of English rugby ever. European champions, Premiership champions, a Devon double. Hail to the Chiefs!
Henry Slade's try in Joe Simmons' boot would secure a 19-13 triumph, a season that the Baxter family could simply never have dreamed of, but it was now reality. Exeter Chiefs, from the Devon Leagues to the best team in Europe and one of the best clubs in the world.
It's weird down here. We're a different, everyone says it, but we're a different kind of breed of people down here. You know, we like to class ourselves as being pretty special, but I think what a lot of boys, you don't find out until you leave. I think every single person has said the same thing, is the fact that this club's so special is because of the boys that are here.
The good thing about this team is that we can look forward to achieving more and doing more things, but there's quite a nice downstairs, there's different photos of every single year of different players, and it's quite nice to look at that and reflect on how many people have actually played for this club and how many people want to play for this club. No one really talks about what has happened, it's more just what we can do and what we can go and achieve.
What word sums it up? You say magical. Well, it wasn't magic. It wasn't magic that made it happen. It was hard work. If you're taking every step of it, if you're involved and you see what everybody's sacrifice is, you see people come and go, you see hundreds and thousands of people who've been on the journey, supporters who were there at the county ground, either passing away or some of them are here, and you see the journeys that everyone's been on.
Those guys that we'd won it with and we'd done it as a team, though, it's funny, we used to say back in the day when we were academy lads coming up, we used to live together in the academy house. We kind of set our standard at it'd be so good if we, you know, played a prem game together, like just one game. It would be pretty awesome. But then to think that we've gone, you know, 8-9 years now playing together, and I want to be in every single final that I can be in, not only for myself and my family, but the boys that I've played with, you know, since the age of 4 or 5. To be able to retire and look back and see that we've achieved this together.
There's nothing magical about it. There's nothing enchanted about it. There's not this thing that it wasn't dreamlike. It was real. And I think if someone said to me, that would probably be the best way to describe it. It was real.